welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, February 1st, 2010. It's already February, you know? I don't know. Anyway, so...
Well, okay, yeah, it is. Okay.
Yeah, it is February. So, yeah. You know, I don't know. Anyway, let's just get right into it. So the first thing, first order of business, both Yvonne and I agreed, is the iPad.
The iPad, yes.
So I posted a little bit on my blog with my initial right off the bat reaction. It's matured a little bit since I posted that. But Yvonne, let's start with you. What are your thoughts?
You know, I've been talking about this whole thing about the about a tablet and how I'm just, you know, doesn't really. I still don't see it. I'm still, you know, I know I haven't seen one of these in person. I know it's thinner and lighter than the others, and it has a longer battery life, yes. I still don't see it.
So here's the thing. And I've read a whole bunch of commentary on this thing since it came out on, or since, not, it didn't come out, since it was announced on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And the ones that resonate the most with me are, well, first of all, let me say, I'm going to talk about the ones that resonate the most for me. I am not going to go out on a limb and necessarily say they're 100% right. A lot still depends on Apple's execution once this gets into people's hands. But here's the thing. First of all, yes, it's clear that this is a V1 and there are a few things missing that if they were there would make it even more compelling. But here's
what are the things that you think
let me not even go there, because that's not an important part of what I'm going to say. The thing that I've seen a lot of people do analysis on that I think is more on than the others is that the idea here really is it's not about you. It's not about me. Neither one of us is the real intended audience of this thing.
So who is it?
This is for the people who, like, It's for, like, I've heard people, it doesn't match mine, but I've heard people describe it as, this is for your mom. This is for the folks who fight with their computer and don't understand the metaphor and blah, blah, blah. This is for the people who all they need and all they want is a little bit of web, a little bit of email, have their pictures, and... You know, maybe
I can see that.
And
I can see that.
You know, and maybe.
But I will tell you, I don't think you know what the deal breaker for me is. There's actually two deal breakers that I actually no. There's really one.
Yeah.
And it's the major one, okay. Which I still can't get over.
Yeah.
If I'm going to get a device like this, I want 30 hours of battery life.
I can see that.
And you know what? You know why the reason is? Because this is supposedly a thing that I just set around all the time. I turn it on and turn it off. I don't want to have to keep plugging this damn thing in. And I don't see what the graded use of this is of something at just 10 hours of battery life.
I mean, right.
Yes, is it longer than a laptop? Yes, it is. But it's not long enough that if you leave it by the bed... No. For a couple of days, you're going to have to fucking plug it in. You're going to wind up grabbing it one day, and the damn battery's out.
This is still the kind of device that you plug in every night. Yes, absolutely.
That's a fucking deal breaker.
But
I'm like, I know it's maybe my pet peeve, but I think that in order to make a device like this that would be so compelling that everybody would have one – I think that if the battery life is not at 30 hours or north, it really compromises the functionality of the damn thing.
Basically, you want to make it so that you can forget to plug it in for an entire day and...
I want to forget to plug it in for an entire week.
While you're using it, right.
Yes!
You know, and I think that, you know, you're still a ways out from that. I mean, and maybe it'll...
That's the reason why a damn book is still better than a fucking thing. Because you don't have to fucking plug the book in.
Well,
if I'm going on a trip, on a vacation, I don't have to remember to freaking charge the damn book.
Right. Well, the e-ink ones are north of a week, as long as you don't use the wireless.
As long as you don't use the wireless.
Right.
But you do...
Well, yeah, but you only need to use the wireless for like a minute at a time to get a new book. You know, so like it's as long as you don't leave it on all the time, because you're not going to be, if you're reading a book, you don't use it anyway. You know, mm-hmm. as long as you don't leave it on all the time, you're at that level. Those are limited single purpose devices for the most part.
Yes.
And this is not, I mean, and I think what they're going for here, I think, you know, they're positioning it as in between the laptop and the phone. But I think where you really get to here is this is if you've already got your iPhone and you've already got a MacBook, this is not going to bring you a whole bunch of joy in the in-between world.
No, not at all.
If you don't have a laptop, this, for 90% of people out there, might be all they need.
That's true. I will give you that. That's true.
I'm not talking about business users. I'm not talking about people using it for work.
No.
I'm not even talking about like students or people who have to write papers, because it's not going to be good for that kind of stuff either. But for just like, you know, I'm hanging out and I want to surf the web a little bit. Hey,
I'm with you. I still see a market for it, but I still don't see a really big mass market for it.
Well, see, you know, another piece of the puzzle that's going to come in here is the app market. Because, you know, like the original iPhone, you know, was pretty cool. It was a geek device. You know, all the geeks wanted it. But where it really came into its own was once that you had the App Store out there. And I'd say, you know, right now, like, you know, 80% of what I use my iPhone for is stuff that doesn't come out of the box. You know, it's apps I bought, you know, and I think the same thing is going to be true of this thing. And, you know,
I'm not there. The main reason I use my iPhone is for email reading, you know, for work. I'm not tethered to my computer all the damn time. And to be quite honest, I was like traveling on a business trip, the first one I've done in a couple of months this week. You know, I didn't even pull out my laptop for the most part. I use my phone.
I'm looking at mine right now, and I do a geeky thing where I always have the most recently used stuff on my first page, and I rearrange things. So, like, let's see, what have I been doing lately? Scrabble, an HP 48 GX calculator emulator.
Oh, that's really geeky.
Yep. okay. The clock. Okay. The clock was built in. The Facebook app.
Okay. Yep. Use that.
Let's see. Yep. The settings app. Okay. That's built in. The Google search app.
Yep.
Spot Me, which is a quick thing to like locate yourself and send an email to somebody of where you are. GPS Drive for Motion X, which is a GPS program. That's like new. Like Newsy, which is an RSS reader. Safari, okay, that's built in. iPod, that's been built in. Program called Wonder Radio, which is a radio listener thing. That's an app. I was checking out the White House app. There's this like little baby app that I downloaded that like has a picture of a cow and you push it and it moves and stuff like that. You know, so there are some built-in stuff, and I use the email, I use the phone, I use the calendar, use text messaging. Of course, those are all built-in. But the point is, I'd say the big value from the iPhone
is the built-in stuff. I'm with you. I got this little real racing car game now that I'm really addicted to that I keep playing on the stupid phone. So I can see that.
I think that's going to be a big factor here. And, you know, what are the things that people develop for this that add value above and beyond what's built in? And you can be sure that, you know, Apple's going to start on an annual basis upgrading this thing too, just like they've done with the iPhone. So what you're seeing now is the opening shot, you know, and what they're trying.
And the prices. And I'll tell you that the pricing is, but some people are saying, "Oh, that 16-gigabyte device, you know, for $499, it's too expensive."
And I
thought about it. But you know what? I think for a lot of people, that's not going to matter.
Mm-hmm.
There are enough hotspots and Wi-Fi that you can live without that. I mean, I think that, and the other thing is that you're going to put few people that buy this, they're not going to load it up with music. It isn't an iPod.
No.
You know, they're going to be looking at stuff online for the most part.
I agree.
So I don't think that the storage is also an issue or not.
Well, you know, I'll differ slightly. You're probably not going to load it up with your music, but
videos.
I can definitely see.
But like I said,
you're probably going to get it then delete it once you've watched it.
Exactly.
You know, you're not going to store all your stuff there. You're going to order your TV show. You're going to watch it, and then you're going to kill it when you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's it.
So I mean, look, very few people have actually had these hands on, and the people who have only had it for limited time periods. You know, I'm going to withhold real judgment until it's actually in people's hands. People have played with it. People have used it for like a week or two. But I'd say more than that. The key here is going to be, is there buzz beyond the geek community? You know, because like I said,
there is. Yeah. Ridiculously so. The other day, what the hell? I don't know. You know, it used to be Sam and I, we would talk about Mac stuff 10 years ago because we've always been in the computer industry, whatever. I mean, come on, we've always been geeks about computers. So we talked about this stuff all the time. You know, this week, I was just a little bit like put off by the fact that random people approached me to talk about Apple announcements. Okay. Right. And I was just like, why the fuck do I want to talk to you about this?
Well, you know, and this is
some geek. I went to this thing, and this kid who I mean, a nice kid. Okay, look, I don't know why I'm, but a nice kid. But nevertheless, I put down my 3GS iPhone down because I was at this team building exercise where we were playing golf indoors. Okay,
yeah.
And this is the kid that managed the little computers to the golf thing, and oh my god. The kid just started babbling on and on about the phones and the iPad and the thing, and I'm just like, I really don't want to listen to this from you, man. I really don't.
But that's the thing, and that's where the potential to this market is, because like
But that wasn't the last person. Okay. I went to the airline club at the airport, okay? And the lady behind the bar, an older 50-year-old lady, is asking me, "Hey, are you going to buy an iPad?" And I'm like, "Oh my god, what the fuck?" I'm like, I'm like taken aback by the question. I'm like, I don't know. I was very polite when I replied to her, but I just thought it was just kind of goofy. But at the same time, look at the fucking buzz that the damn company is generating over all this shit. Contrary to, some people will be annoyed by this, but what the hell anyway, I gotta tell it like it is. The fact that they released the number of Nexus One phones that Google managed to sell already since the announcement, I don't know if you saw how many there are, and I know that a few of you are listening, okay? So, you know, or at least it seems like it. There are only 20,000, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Not very many. And I said this before when we were talking about this again. The problem with it is a damn Nexus One phone costs as much as the damn iPad.
Right.
I mean, if somebody really did, and I said, you know, this whole thing about doing this disconnected model, oh yeah, you can buy it unlocked, you know, and that way you don't have to get into contract. Nobody is going to spend, well, most people are not going to spend $500 for an unlocked phone when you could pay $99 for a freaking iPhone 3G with a contract at AT&T. There is no way.
Right.
The price bridge is too big. Okay? I don't see how the hell you're going to make that work. And then the other thing people were complaining was that this customer service just sucked. Or it was non-existent. I mean, you know, you're competing against Apple that right now, basically, the customer services compared to most other tech companies is basically they get down on their knees and kiss your ass. I mean, I showed up the other day with a friend of mine, with my brother, who had a bad battery on a MacBook that he didn't even bring. He didn't have the serial number. The hell, it could have been out of warranty, for Pete's sake. And the guy at the Apple store, you know what he wound up doing? He couldn't find it, whatever. He went to the shelf. He pulled out a battery out of a box, put the bulging battery back into box and sent it as a defective machine back. The factory said, forget it. Just take the battery. Get out of here. Okay? Don't worry about it.
So we got to take a break, but I just want to mention there are a couple articles John Gruber on Daring Fireball has linked to a couple of these. One that I read most recently was Stephen Frank. And the article, he basically talks about old world and new world computing. And I think this, like, nails it, which is in the old world of computing, the computers were still sort of, are still, these devices where, as friendly as they are compared to where they were a few years ago, it's still fundamentally sort of an engineering geeky metaphor where you're worrying about files, you're worrying about directories, you've got menus with all kinds of crap in them. Yes. You've got all of this stuff. And, you know, this is typified by the whole thing where, you know, all of us who are somewhat computer savvy have relatives or friends who call us and are like, my computer is doing something strange. I can't understand it. How do I deal with this? And, you know, you take them through some, you know, troubleshooting thing. Well, look in this menu, try this.
Now, you know, recently what I've been doing is I'm using Citrix. I'm like, I don't even want to tell them.
Here's the point. Like, you know, people who are sort of get computers, sort of know the answer to most things is, you know, fiddle around for a little bit, look for things where in the menus it has a name somewhat related to what you're dealing with. Right. And then if you still can't find anything, Google something that was related to a few words. There was a good XCKD cartoon about this a while back. But, you know, whereas that sort of makes sense in that sort of mindset. But to this whole other larger portion of the public, that's all gobbledygook. It's all black magic. It's all, you know, mysterious. Whereas, you know, you grab an iPhone and those same people get it right away. You know,
here's the one thing I discovered.
And that might be the same thing with the iPad.
Just one thing, I like crystallizes. I realized the other day, there is no way to browse the files on an iPhone.
No.
There's no finder.
Right.
It doesn't exist.
Yep.
There is no way to do such a thing. And I realized the other day, I'm like, oh, you know, it's like I had those idiotic Windows phones before, and I just realized there's no way to look at the file system.
Right.
It's like it doesn't exist. It shouldn't. That's the reality how it should be. It shouldn't matter to you where this directory structure bullshit. It's under, that should be irrelevant to the user.
And I mean, I'll you know, that's something that I mean confuses a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Like, you know. Yeah, what do you mean it's in a directory somewhere? I saved it in Word.
Right.
You know? And so, yeah, this is the kind of thing where, you know, yes, the power user wants to control and understand that kind of thing. But what Apple does time after time after time again is identify the 80% need, focus on like a laser on that 80% need, and ignore the geeks. And see what happens.
Yes.
You know? Yes. And what do you get? You get an iPod, you know? And you get the iPhone. And people are like jumping up and down about how closed the iPhone is and how you have to go through this closed walled garden and you can't multitask and anything that goes on there has to be approved by Apple. And, you know, believe me, I'm one of the ones that I stifle under some of that. I want my damn Slingbox app that works under 3G, you know? But at the same time, what does that mean? That means that everything is nicely controlled. It works. You know,
it means that contrary to my old Windows mobile phone, which I have to reboot, you know, 7 times a week, and I'm not exaggerating a number, I don't recall the last time that my iPhone froze.
Right. Mine's frozen a couple times. But it's very infrequent.
But they're very rare. Yeah. Okay? And my iPhone doesn't bog down to a crawl like used to happen in my Windows mobile phone where 7 apps were running in the background that were doing a whole bunch of shit. I tried to frickin' hit a key to dial a phone number. They would react after 5 seconds. I had to open the task manager for Pete's sake and kill applications. You know, no average user can do that shit. Okay.
Right.
They want something that just works.
Yep. And I don't know whether Apple will succeed here or not, but I think this is what they're really trying to do here. It's not really about finding that in-between device between laptops and phones. It's about, you know, this is how they think, this is the vision that Apple has for how computing should be in the future. It is not your open general purpose computer that everybody can tinker with. There'll always be a space for that. There'll always be a need for that among more advanced users. But I think what Apple's betting here is that they've got, you know, a huge market out there that doesn't need any of that crap.
Yep, I agree.
Anyway, we are way over, so let's take a break, and we will be back after this with something else.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we are back, and the next thing is, you know, Obama did a few things over the last week, had a few little, you know, had a speech thing, and then had another little town hall-y thing with Republicans. So, you know, I'll be honest, let's see, I watched most of the State of the Union, but I was multitasking and not paying 100% attention. And
I watched probably, I'd say, over 50% of the State of the Union.
And the Republican thing, I watched the beginning of it on, like, YouTube, and I was having some bandwidth issues, so it kept stuttering,
I
didn't watch the whole thing.
I watched clips and read a few of the different stories on the different papers regarding it.
So I think the State of the Union was, I don't know, it seemed okay, but, I mean, I wasn't, like, blown away by anything. I think the thing that most people sort of commented on afterwards was, you know, Obama had no sort of issues sort of criticizing people that were there, I guess. I don't know. He sort of said, stop being obstructionist to the Republicans and Democrats. You need to get your act together and get some stuff done. I don't know. What were your thoughts on State of the Union? And then we can talk about the town hall thing.
Well, I think you know, my thoughts on it were that, you know, he's acknowledged that some of his policies that he's tried to present forward have not moved at the speed that he's wanted them to move, and that some of the, you know, that the economy obviously is still in problems, and that they're going to try to do things to tackle the slow economy. You know, I think for the most part he was trying to address the substantive issues that people in general seem to be concerned about. Okay, but you know, I think that it wasn't anything that would blow away everybody, anybody. But it wasn't the dud either. I think it was substantive, and I think that what he did was just lay out what his priorities would be for this year. Kind of like the same way as he laid out some of the priorities he had for this year. He talked about tackling Afghanistan. He talked about tackling the stimulus package. He talked about trying to tackle healthcare. Now, you know, a few of those things went through, but I think one of the things that I just, you know, struck me like right now, and as we are in February.
Yep.
I think earlier in July, we were talking about how fast supposedly the healthcare bill was moving, okay? And 6 months fucking Congress, I mean, we've been studying this healthcare issue for 15 years. They've been studying it for I don't know how many years. 6 months have elapsed and these fucking bunch of fucking idiots can't come to an agreement on healthcare? I mean, really? Is there no way that we could figure out a certain number of substantive changes that we could do to improve the fucking healthcare system in this country?
No.
There is no way.
No.
No. The answer is no. they're just that you know.
Well, and I'll give you, there were some reports just over the last couple days that said that on the day before the Scott Brown election in Massachusetts, the House and Senate had actually gone ahead and come to an agreement on what the compromise bill would be between the House and Senate, and had sent it off to the Congressional Budget Office for scoring. But then the Scott Brown thing happened, and everyone was sort of like, oh, well, never mind then.
Never mind then. And, you know, I just, you know, I don't think that that should have stopped it anyway, to be honest. You know, if they had that compromise, they should have tried to go back and try to figure out how to get the votes.
Well, and supposedly there is still some negotiation going on behind the scenes and some stuff, and it's not completely dead yet, but they're certainly not giving that impression, you know, and...
No, they're not. Not at all. So...
Yeah, so...
I mean...
Basically,
you had these people go around in circles for 9 months and come up with nothing. So far.
So far.
Nothing.
Yep.
Yeah. And I, you know, I find it just appalling that they are this incompetent, okay? you know, I mean, you've got a clear majority and you can't fucking come together and put something out. What do you want me to tell you, say about the fucking Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi? I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just flabbergasted that they are this incompetent. I actually, you know, in some sense, I felt a little bit of a sense of relief that maybe that they don't have the stupid majority. Because they don't seem to know what the hell to do with it. No, but what I meant is that they didn't have the super majority. Yeah, they don't have the super majority of 60 votes.
Well, you know, here's the thing on that, though. First of all, like, you know, the Democrats are not a unified caucus. They had 60 in name. But, you know, the reality is that...
They had to pull things from here and there in order to get those 60.
They had to pull things from here and there, and the people right at the edge of that 60 votes are, you know, just slightly short of being Republicans. Hell, some of them were Republicans. I mean, Arnold
Spector.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the 60 votes was always going to be hard for them, but there's still the, you know... It's just the time issue is a big part of it. Like, there was lots and lots and lots of dithering and taking all kinds of extra time that didn't need to be taken. You know, and I've said multiple times, I'm not so sure that what they came up with in the end was the right thing or a good thing or whatever. But completely aside from the merits of whatever argument they're doing, the fact that they can't get anything together and pass anything just... gives a complete impression of incompetence.
Yes, you know, and totally. I'll say this on top of this. You know, Obama was right when he called out the Republicans as well. I mean, I'm sorry. They could go and they could talk this bullshit right now. All they've done this whole year is call anybody who doesn't believe call anybody who is in any opposing party. A Bolshevik, a communist, a country sellout, and for the most part, they haven't proposed anything worthwhile. If they did, and even if it was picked up, they would vote against it because somebody else put it on the bill, so because they were on the other side, they had to vote against it.
Multiple people have pointed out that the actual bill that ended up passing the Senate was very similar to proposals... parts of it included things that McCain had proposed. It was very similar to things that Bob Dole had proposed a number of years back. It was far to the right of the Bill Clinton health plan from wherever, and in many cases resembled very much the alternative plan to Bill Clinton's plan that the Republicans had thrown out there at various points in time.
Exactly.
Yeah, so,
and these assholes still were going to vote against it simply because they weren't the guys who were in the majority on the bill.
Hey, it's
and
working
that's
for them.
Well, no, it is working for them as a political strategy. You know, it is working for them. But you know what? As a person who is a centrist, I think they're a bunch of fucking assholes. Okay, because all they're doing, they couldn't give a flying fuck about improving the country. All they're doing this is just playing it for political gain. Okay, great. they're doing it and they're winning on it, but you know what? They ain't getting my fucking respect because I am not stupid enough, as a whole bunch of other people have been in the last few months, and start believing, oh yeah, they're right, you know, the other people are communists. Yeah, I should believe the stupid bullshit they're saying. Listen, the fucking Democrats are incompetent because they haven't been able to pass shit with the majority they have been, and these fucking assholes are no better either, because all they're doing over there sitting, oh, you said A, I say B, 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 I say B because you said A. And so, you know, anyway. No.
Yeah. okay, so anyway, I ranted on this last week, so I'm not going to repeat myself here because I think I'm mostly in agreement with you. I think there are plenty of ways that the Democrats could have gotten things done. They are not good at it. And again, completely independent of my ideas of whether or not what they would have done would be good or bad.
It's good or bad. That's another story.
They just, you know, they just can't seem to push anything through. And the comparison, of course, is they've got a bigger majority than the Republicans ever had.
But I agree.
But the Republicans seem to be able to get things done when they had, you know,
well, I will say this, because even if you because they actually, on a lot of those bills, like the prescription drug mandate for the weather, a significant number of Democrats voted, for the bills.
Right.
Okay. It wasn't this unified block that the Republicans are doing right now. The Democrats, when they were sitting in the minority, were not this solid block of no voters by any stretch of the imagination, which the Republicans are as right now. It doesn't really matter whether they agree with any of the stuff that's being passed. They're just going to vote no simply because they're not in the majority. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, but last year, you know, if you look, the Iraq war, the prescription drug benefit, the tax cuts, all this shit that you go through, you found significant number of Democrats that went and just weighed whether they were agreed to it or not, and they voted for it or not. The Republicans are not doing anything of the sort right now. They're just simply voting, you know, no to whatever the hell it is because they're not in power. That's it.
Okay. So we need to take a break again. Let's take a break and talk a little bit about that town hall thing because it was kind of interesting. And we'll be right back. Okay.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Fremont Bascule by Carol Guess. Flick of a switch and we split the drawbridge. Below us sails sailed through us, separating Rat City from her emerald twin. Gasworks Park set its sundial to zilch. We might have plotted murder on a lazy gray pontoon. Instead, we watched the lives of others water to wake 35 times a day. Each ship seemed bound for something better. Long hair hardly made a ladder. Owl cars trundled over the split, long dead passengers asleep in their seats. We lived off filched surimi and rain caught in wooden spoons. We never touched. We freed the cut.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, and we are back. So more on the sort of Republican-Democrat dynamic. The thing that happened this last week is that Obama was actually invited to speak in front of the Republican House Caucus. I forget exactly what they actually called the event.
It was a retreat, apparently. It was a Republican
Caucus retreat.
Some bullshit.
Anyway,
yeah, whatever.
And Obama,
anyway, who cares?
Obama was invited to attend and talk and do Q&A. And the Republicans actually, well, everyone, I guess, agreed that this would be, you know, taped and recorded and broadcast on C-SPAN and the whole deal. And so basically, you know, Obama came in, gave some opening remarks, and then took Q&A from Republican House members. And everything I have read commenting on this so far from both sides of, you know, the political spectrum seem to basically say Obama hit it out of the park. And
yep, that's what I read, but that was my impression.
And like the Republican House members are sort of saying, maybe we made a mistake by letting this be on TV. You know, but
because he really nailed him. I mean, that was my impression from everything I read. I mean, you know, because they tried to come up with a whole bunch of their this bullshit right now. They're saying, well, we're doing the stuff of the people. You're not considering our proposals. And I'm like, we're not considering our proposals. This is all the shit included in the bill. And you're saying you're not for proposals? Well, I don't know. You know, oh, it was just, you know, you're right. They probably shouldn't have let it go out on the air because they came off looking like idiots. I think in a big part of it. Okay.
Well, and you know, like I said, I only listened to parts of it here or there. I mean, it seemed like basically the format was, you know, the Republican would ask a question and Obama would then go on for 4 or 5 minutes, you know, outlining his response to the question. And basically, you know, it gave him a platform to talk, but, and maybe he didn't come off as well, but aside from the specifics of this, I think this is actually a very healthy exercise. And
I do agree.
We've talked before, like, you know, in the UK, they have Prime Minister's Question Time, where every single week almost, the Prime Minister gets up in front of the Parliament and takes questions from the opposition. Questions that are very often quite hostile. And he parries them, and you have that back and forth, and you have that real debate. And that's something that you don't see very often in the U.S., and this is sort of the closest you've seen to it in a long time. I mean, you basically have – I mean, the House Republicans are not, like, known for their moderation. This is, like, you know, the people who more so than anything else really represent the opposition here, and, you know, they gave it their best in terms of asking him questions and him coming back and parrying him and having that debate, and I think, you know – I think this is something that should happen all the time. I mean, regardless of who's president and who's in opposition, you know, having actual real conversations of one sort or another between, you know, who's in power and the opposition, I think is an incredibly healthy and useful thing. You don't see that in the actual debates in the House and Senate, really. I mean, they're basically just giving speeches at each other as opposed to, you know, this kind of actual Q&A. I think this is great. I think it should happen more often. I worry that because there are two approaches the Republicans could take now. One is that, you know, this was a mistake. We got clobbered. We're never doing this again. The other is, you know, next time we'll be better prepared and we'll be able to, like, come back at him better. And I really hope it's the second, because I'd like to see, you know, this kind of thing every few months would be awesome. I
agree. I actually agree, because I think that it also, you know, one of the things that Obama did is that he, which is one of the things that I was really glad that he finally did, you know, he went, when they were talking about the health bill, you know, first of all, he highlighted to them the number of things that he included, as you mentioned before, that damn it is worth their ideas. So don't go and, like, say this shit that nobody's considering their ideas when they were in there. Okay, it's been clearly highlighted. But the second thing is that, you know, the whole thing about how a lot of, you know, Republicans have been trying to say that this is a Bolshevik plot to freaking take over the country. You know, he was like, you know, he threw it out at them directly. It's like, you know, you guys are coming out here pointing fingers saying that there's some Bolshevik plot to take over this fucking country. And this, you know, this is bullshit. Okay, you know, sit down, let's negotiate instead of coming up with such crazy name calling. Okay, and hopefully it'll, you know, I think that if you interacted more often, I think that that kind of name calling would not happen so frequently, and maybe they could get down and sit down together and actually do something.
Well, and here's the thing that, you know, people on the left have been criticizing Obama for actually, like, sticking to his sort of post-partisan rhetoric where, you know, the Republicans can obstruct all they want, but I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep trying to engage and work with them and make that an important part of what I do. And, you know, folks on the left are saying, you know, you're wasting your time. You're why are you doing this? You need to just go into a mode
walk all over them.
We've got the majority, so we're going to shove things through. But Obama's, for the most part, said no. You know, I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep trying to engage. And, you know, if they don't, they don't. But I'm going to keep trying. And I think that is, you know, who knows how much it'll work or not, but in terms of actually getting anything done. But I think even if there's no engagement from the Republicans, even if nothing gets done, the mere fact that he keeps trying to do this somewhat puts it sort of puts him on the high ground, and it elevates the overall discussion, even if the other side doesn't engage. And frankly, you know, as I'm saying this, I'm realizing that there's a 100% parallel to what he said he would do with, like, Iran and stuff. You know, but, you know, I think it's a good approach in general. I mean, it's, you know, do what you have to do, but always engage the people on the other side as if they are honestly trying to work with you to find a compromise. If they're not, they're not. But that doesn't mean you change your approach. You still work under assumptions that the other party is working as an honest player.
Yep. 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 Okay. So, all right. I don't know. I didn't have anything else on the subject. Anything else you have on?
Nope. Let's take a very quick break, and then we'll come back for one last thing.
This podcast is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, Safer, Healthier People.
Deck yourself with Blue Protection. La 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 la. Take the time for vaccination. La 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 la. Take action every day to help you. La 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 la. Take antivirals if doc says to. La 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 la.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay, okay, so the last thing that was on Yvonne's list, I had some miscellaneous other crap, but nothing exciting.
Well, I don't know. What is it? I don't know. What's the miscellaneous other stuff that you had? I don't know. Maybe we could pick a topic.
No, no. It's just like me bitching about some, you know, annual process crap and nothing important. So you wanted – yours was better. You wanted to talk – Wait.
Well, let
me go there. You wanted to talk about Toyota and the issues they've had with, like, cars just randomly accelerating. And I wanted to start by asking first, was this what happened to you when you got home the other day?
No, not at all. And as a people who are friends of mine on Facebook will know that actually Jay Duff was right. Okay, when he said that he knew the last time I did damage to a car. I started reflecting on it. He's absolutely right. Because the last time that I actually caused damage that I had to repair on a car was 20 years ago, okay? It was when I was in college. Until this week. Because the other times what happened was I had this SUV in Puerto Rico that had no rear visibility whatsoever. And a couple of times I backed into a couple of cars, but I actually caused no damage to my car. Damage to the – yes, okay? So I didn't have to fix mine, okay? And you know, it doesn't count the one time that somebody ran a stop sign and T-boned me. Okay, that wasn't my fault. I mean, you know, the other guy had to pay for it. I was pulling into my garage. I hadn't slept much. I was kind of frazzled and in a hurry with a whole bunch of stuff. You know, don't ask me why the hell, but I've pulled my car to this garage. I don't know. I've pulled my car to garages I don't know how many freaking times, and I just wasn't paying attention, and I just scraped the right side of my car.
Very nice. Congratulations, you know, Yvonne.
Sounds like something I would do. Yeah, you know, but it's just, you know, I was just, shit, I had done. Anyway, so I did that, you know, and so, Sam knows how I am very meticulous with my vehicles, okay? You know, and so therefore to me this is like, you know, I'm like I'm like, you know, I'm just apoplectic about the whole thing.
So
okay,
it was not, however, because your accelerator suddenly jammed.
Not at all. You know, one thing is that my car is a manual transmission. So one thing that I know about, if the gas keeps going, you know, you could just hit the pop the clutch, yeah, put it in neutral, you know, that kind of thing. The one thing I still, you know, okay, everybody's saying now that yes, the accelerators are defective or they're being stuck down.
So just okay, quick. The background is Toyota recalled.
The background is that originally Toyota. Look, a number of people have there have been a number of incidents over a number of years with a certain number of different Toyotas where there have been claims that the accelerators are getting stuck and a number of people have been killed in accidents. I mean, the one that was the worst was one that happened in August 28th near San Diego, where a Lexus loaner vehicle that a police officer had, the throttle got stuck. The car accelerated to over 125 miles an hour. And they went and they approached an intersection and hit an SUV. The car went and like careened through a fence, rolled over and burst into flames and killed everybody in the car. Now, you know, the one thing is that, like I've said before, this is a situation that no matter if your accelerator's stuck, there is no real good reason why this kind of thing should happen, okay? I mean, if you use any common sense, and I'm still, you know, I still can't believe that the guy was a California Highway Patrolman. Look, if you're in a situation like that, you know, your car pops into neutral. You stop. That's it. You know, you're done. There is no, you know, if your car's in neutral, it will not accelerate. Cars pop into neutral easily. There is no thing that will keep it stuck in drive, okay? You know, if you're ever in such a situation, again, just, you know, it's just as simple as that. Now, these people, for some reason, just kept on going. Baffles me.
There are a couple things. One is, of course,
people are not used to they're driving automatics, and people I know are not used to fucking...
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the sort of heat of the moment. You panic. You don't know what's going on. You're not thinking clearly. You're just like, oh, no. Shit, you were going fast. You know, and so that's part of it. Part of it is what you just said, probably. Also, I actually saw posted earlier today, like a little note that came out of, I don't know if it was Toyota or somewhere else, but basically, you know, the instructions for what to do if this happened to you. And there was more there than just pop it into neutral. There was like pop it into neutral, but put the key into the ACC position, but don't turn it all the way off, because if you turn it all the way off, the steering
then you
will
can't control.
And,
no,
yeah,
you
blah,
yeah
blah,
yeah
blah.
Of course, right.
Yeah, so
but you don't even need to listen. You don't need to turn the key off. I mean, leave it on because okay, so the engine's running, so it'll over rev. There's a rev limiter. Who cares? Whatever. You know. Also, you'll hear the car going wham 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 wham. But the car's not going anywhere. Yeah, there's nothing to do. But anyway, the one thing about it is, okay, so that's just a tip to do in case of that. Toyota, you know, had been believing that the reason was the floor mats. That was their belief.
Oh, the floor mat getting stuck.
Yes, okay.
Yep.
But apparently now, after more investigation, more accidents, it appears that they have discovered that, yes, that the accelerator pedal is getting stuck, okay, on the down position. And somehow they're having to come up with a fix to retrofit the vehicles they were forced to start production of a number of vehicles with the accelerators. Now, it's kind of funny. Because 20 years ago, there was this issue with Audi in the U.S. where they were, you know, talking about unintended acceleration in their vehicles. Now, 20 years ago, what they discovered after a lot of investigation was there was no problem with the accelerators, okay? People, apparently, the actual thing that was happening more with Audis was the pedal layout was a little bit different. The brake and accelerator pedal closer together than people were used to. A lot of these people had never had a foreign car, and they were actually hitting the gas instead of the brake. Okay, yeah. So that was after, and there was a big 60-minute story back then, and Audi sales plummeted. They almost left the U.S. market because of it. So I know that right now they're still saying that, you know, Toyota has determined that they did discover a defect in the accelerators that is causing them to stay down. So, you know, they've come up with a fix, so they said they're going to do that. But, you know, there's a number of people that are saying that they're scared of driving their vehicles. And I'm like, you know, there is no damn reason to be scared of driving these vehicles. If you, now that you know about this, if you're aware of the situation and you know what to do, there is nothing that should stop you from driving one of these vehicles. I don't believe that's just, you know, if
you
you're...
You might want to stop tailgating, though.
You might. Yeah, that's about it. But, you know, you shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. So anyway, so that's, you know, so that's the thing about that. It is one of the largest recalls by an automotive company in history. I'm still surprised, you know, to talking about how such a simple thing could just be, you know, just stay stuck. I mean, most modern throttles also, remember, most cars now, the new ones, are getting electronic throttles. I mean, there's no real linkage like it used to be before, you know. The thing on the below your accelerator foot is just a sensor that measures the distance of travel that you have on your foot, and it just electronically sends a signal to feed the amount of gas that needs to go to the car. It's not, you know, it's not like it used to be anymore. So, you know, it's how cars have changed. So anyway,
okay,
all right. So that's that.
That's that. I think that's it for this week. And unless you have any last words, Yvonne.
Don't have any last words. My birthday's on Tuesday. My wife kept thinking that I'm 39. I mean, no, 40, but I am only turning 39. So, so I still got 1 year to go before 40. So
there you go.
Hopefully, and I am planning on making it till then, at
good.
Least.
Good. I encourage that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, happy birthday, Yvonne, and thanks everybody for joining us. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, thoughts, comments, etc. Or post on, post a comment on abelsmay.com. And, tell your friends. And tune in next week. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.